Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Dow where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now, funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello, I'm Fake Station Jax. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Weber on the board. S&P futures down only 650. Dow futures down 250. NASDAQ futures down 70. A little better than it was a little while ago. But yesterday, Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing fine. Happy Friday.
Yeah, happy Friday. Just to review yesterday's carnage. It's not like we don't want to look at it again. S&P 500 down 137. That's a real number. NASDAQ down 414. The futures are down 500, like exactly. Dow's on 1190, so it's about, I think that's the worst point total like ever from the Dow. Percentage wise, it was 4.42, which is not much to sneeze at either. The VIX is trading 41.64, which is about as high as it's been probably since 2008 or somewhere in there. I mean, it's awful high. I mean, it's really, to maneuver to do any trading, I mean, the spreads, everything is traded almost the same thing. I was doing some stuff for some people in Apple yesterday, and God, I think some of the, like the December 200 puts or something are like $5 or $6 or $7 or something ridiculous like that. So, I mean, you absolutely, it's not like I'll take a little shot this afternoon to the upper downside and see if I make a few bucks. I mean, it's a real number. I mean, you're not paying to play. And I'm doing a percentage thing here. I'll look at the spider. I'll get my little chart up. Nobody likes it when I call it a graph because it's actually a chart. And also the machine is unloading. I got to believe we're down pushing over 10% easy. Let me see. The high was I'm going to say 325 or somewhere in there, and we're down to 292. But we'll get that exact number. So, what do you think, Kevin? What are you guys talking about? This in class or what?
Well, yeah, we have. I think I sent you something from last Saturday. I sent you via email just a description of a conversation. One of the things that's problematic is, well, first of all, anybody who is using any kind of just-in-time model that incorporates Chinese parts is totally screwed.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's just a problem. However, there are a lot of companies. I talked to a small manufacturer, for example, in here in Elkhart County, they always have a challenge anyway because they source their parts in China. They have about a 2-week lead time from order to fulfillment. And that's their client's expectations. But for the parts, it's about a 6-week lead time normally. So, it's a tough act, a balancing act for them anyway. They have, obviously have their demand predictions, but it can spike or it can slow. And when you're in a 6-week lead time for satisfying that demand that is not perfectly predictable, that's a challenge. He said that they always have to stock up in advance of the Chinese New Year. That's always something that they have to do because everything closes. Part of the process is going to your ancestral villages and so on, and all kinds of factories close in China. So really the hit, early in February, I think this is part of why you're seeing the markets took a while to react, is that a fair amount of the disruption was normal and planned. But as it drags on, you have people saying, oh, how long can I withstand this? if you are living without a lot of cash, if you're, you know, you may have a good profitable business, but if you don't have a big cash stockpile and this goes on for months and months, how are you going to weather the storm? And I suspect that's what's really has people spooked, is that there's just going to be a, you know, and that'll cascade through. It's not just consumer goods not available. It's not just industrial goods not available. It's also bank loans not getting paid and things like that. So I think you have that part of it. Now, part two is, as part of the same conversation, we had somebody whose business is as a industrial valves manufacturer. And he said that because of the tariffs, they had moved their sourcing to a U.S. company that was built around automation. And that company had been more expensive to get their parts because they, you know, because it was relatively new and because it, because it was new and because it had to recover its capital expenditures. So that was a problem. And they didn't go that direction until the tariffs made that pricing more attractive. And he said that company has come down a lot in its pricing because as more business has found its way to them, that business has, they've started to repay the capital expenditures quicker and they've adjusted their prices accordingly. So there are people who are in good stead right now, and that's really the point of me blathering on about this, is that you do have people who have made moves along the way that give them a competitive advantage over others. And I would say the same thing. You have, you know, you still have people who move their sources out of China to avoid tariffs to Malaysia are probably in good shape. Vietnam, not quite as good because Vietnam's had its own corona instances. And in fact, Samsung is reliant on Vietnam, and they've slowed down a lot. But Samsung, relative to Apple, where they are just stuck, is another issue. So I'll stop and let you talk.
No, I think that that's everything is its own family. It's hard for me to imagine that on a complex piece of machinery that you're not hurting someplace. I mean, there's some people that are going to. I would imagine that anybody who's in the machinery repair business is probably knocking them dead too. I mean, you're not getting new stuff. And
well, and you know where else you'll see a spike is as long as they don't rely on China for the parts to meet demand, is that there's a lot you can do with 3D printing now, and even if it's just temporary replacement parts for equipment. If you can print it, it may not last as long, but if when it fails again, you print another one.
Well, just a little bit of perspective on where the market is. I mean, everybody continues to, well, and rightfully so, if it's calendar to calendar, but the only problem is when the calendar to calendar just happens to match up the way you want it to, you have to be careful with that, because last year, we started the year, you know, roughly around 255 in the SPY, which is a spider, the thing that everybody trades in the S&P 500, and we ran up to, you know, at the end of the year, we were pushing 3-something. So it was a 20% year. But if you look at the last quarter of last year, which was last quarter of 2018, which was a debacle, we started that last quarter with the S&P, the spider, at 287. Now, right now, it's trading 293. So we're up 2% from September of 2018. So if you look at that number, obviously, we went way down from there and way up, and now we're coming way down again. Market's been damn near flat, and with a lot of areas in the market down. I mean, the Qs are up, the Russell, the small cap is down, the oil piece is obliterated. So, I mean, the last six quarters have been a little better than flat, and despite all the accolades of last year, I mean. That's just the fact. I mean, I'm not going to change the numbers on last year. I'm not going to say last year wasn't a good year. It was. But I'm just saying, when you look at, don't be careful when you start, like, it's like when people say how good an investment is in stock market, in the stocks, which of course that's, what I do for a living. So I think people should be in stocks. But the, when you look at annual returns of the S&P or the Dow, I used to read a lot of them that started like the day after the 29 crash, Kevin, instead of like the day before. Okay. It is, you know, a lot of times of what you, you know, the buy and hold theory has a lot to do with when you bought it and when you held it too, right?
It sure does.
So now the question
is, you know, who knows? This may be, you know, a great buying opportunity for people. You know, and it may not. It, you know, it, we saw this in 2008. There were a lot of companies that that just couldn't withstand it. They were otherwise, yeah, you know, profitable going concerns, but they could not withstand the downturn indefinitely, and it hurt. And you also saw, you know, there were some pretty good vultures out there, and I mean that in the most positive way. But people who were able to buy up those assets when those companies shut their doors, and long term, they've been very healthy. You know, take over here in the RV industry, a company like Forest River, you know, that was able to just buy up a lot of the assets of the RV companies that closed. Well, Forest River had Warren Buffett money behind it, because that's part of that Buffett family, and as a result, yeah, they could withstand it. They go as long as you need to, and then when the industry starts to come back, you know, they and Thor were the you know, the two big ones left standing.
Well, that's the part that you really have to be you know, aware of. I'm not saying you should. Is that, well, how can I put this? One of the reasons why that when we started the protected index program in 1997. I mean, Dan and I decided, well, first of all, I had traded the OEX for 20 years, and he was a commodity guy, and he traded Chrysler on the old Brown badges, but we weren't set up. I don't know if anybody really is, but we weren't set up at PTI in terms of people. We had a lot of people that were people friendly, a lot of people really knew a lot about options and protection and stuff like that, but we really didn't have, you know, 15 people were, you know, Joe's an expert in the energy patch, and you know, Mike's an expert in the drug patch, and Judy's a, you know, an expert over in whatever, the entertainment companies or whatever. We didn't really have that, so we zeroed in on the indexes as the way for people who aren't. I mean, if you walk in the door and say, you know, here's whatever, $500,000, $1 million, I want to invest it. I really didn't feel we were capable, or if I ever thought anybody was, Kevin, of saying, okay, here's your. We'll pick these 15 stocks, and we'll put, you know, whatever, you know, what would that be? If it was $1 million, we'll put $75,000 in each one. You know, I mean, a lot of places do that. A lot of places, as a matter of fact, a real lot of places do that. If you go in, you're going to go to Big Cap Bob. If you go to Merrill Lynch and you say, here's $1 million to Big Cap Bob, and the next day you've got, you know, 10 pages of sheets with 48 shares of this and 32 of that, and you're all over the place. I mean, you basically got the S&P, I'm going to say probably a couple of hundred, and he's a little bit more an IBM, or a little less than the average would have you, and that's what those guys do. And a lot of them do, you know, I think probably pretty well, but I mean, you're not going to, when I say pretty well, if the S&P is up 8%, maybe they'll be up 8.5, you know, or something. If the S&P's down 10, they'll be down 9.5, but you're not going to be, when you have a diversified thing like that. But the problem comes, Kevin, this is one of the things, I don't know if anybody's, you know, if they put two and two together on the show, that I constantly keep talking about, is when you start looking at averages, and when you start looking at this broad brush of essentially crap, you can roll over a lot of people's heads doing that. I mean, if you look at the, I'm going to say that if we go down another 20%, which I don't think we're going to, I sure hell as hope we don't, but if we do, you're going to find out that 10 years from now, there's going to be some idiot boy or girl on TV saying, all you got to do is hang in there, buy the dip, blah, blah, blah. But one of the reasons why we did the Protected Index program was an index is never going to go out of business, Kevin. I mean, if we go down 80%, at some point we're going to find 500 companies if Stocks and Jacks is one of the companies, right? I mean, there's going to be companies in there. Now the problem is, it's like the Dow. Like if we go down another 30% and the Dow comes back 4 years from now, what makes you think there's not going to be five new stocks in the Dow where the old ones are out there? So you got to be real careful. Just like the farmers in the soybean farmers that got forced out by the tariffs up in Minnesota, North Dakota, and those places, the farming industry in Minnesota someday, when all the stuff, the world gets back together, is going to be okay. But Farmer Bob is long gone. He's working at Walmart someplace, right? I mean, he's not okay. And nor, I mean, we had the people that, thank God, we didn't have too many of these people, back down in 2008 when, I mean, if somebody would have come to you, if you were a stock guy, you'd say, here's my, I mean, your mom could easily have done this, Kevin. Being a Chicago person, she could easily have had Sears, United Airlines, you know, Kmart, General Motors. Everybody liked General Motors. I mean, she could have had all that stuff in her portfolio, and they're all toast. Right, so she never came back. That portfolio is still zero, right? I mean, you look. I mean, the QQQs has come back to higher than it was in 2000, but only one of the five stocks that were 45% of it in 2000 is still part of one of the five. Microsoft, the other four. I mean, Intel finally, like last year, or was it last quarter, finally got back to its 2000 price. It's 20 years, for God's sake. So, I mean, so you have to be, when this stuff starts to happen and the averages come, people don't, well, we try to with the Protected Index program for just that reason, is we want a benchmark. We want to say we did better than the S&P or better than the Russell, because that's what you, the client, decided to put you in. For whatever reason that day, that we thought the Russell had been lagging or the Qs had been lagging or whatever. But basically, we're talking about the three or four biggest indices. Now, this week, I mean, I'm trying to put some people in the XLV, and I keep being greedy, and it's a good thing, because the thing's down about $4, and I haven't made my first trade yet. So, I'm going to get it cheaper today. But one of these days, it'll be, I think, somewhere along the line here, if I was going to put my money someplace, the healthcare area seems to be the most resilient. But who knows? At the end of the year, it may not be. But that's why I'm going to protect that too. But I mean, you have to be real careful when you gloss over these averages. It's like some of the articles I read now, Kevin, both from the left and the right. They make their point by going back and forth between the mean and the median. Well, this is, look at this averages up here. But this one's not doing so hot. Wait a minute. One's a mean and one's a median. They're never going to be.
Well, and I'm not sure either one's available.
Yeah. Well, but I'm saying when you're looking at, I think when you look at something that skews like the 1% income stuff is done, I think it makes more sense to look at the median person versus the mean. Because two billionaires can make everybody look like they're making money if you take the average, right? So, I mean, depending on what you're looking at.
And to voice agreement with that, I think much more so than a mean or a median is you have to understand the variance. What's really the difference? What's the standard difference? What's the outlier difference? Because you have to take those out of any statistical analysis. You know, you still need to account for them because they, you know, especially on the high end, the outliers are significant and have significant influence over economic activity. Nevertheless, that's not where normal exists.
By the way, we just rallied 15 points here. I have a feeling the Fed's going to do something.
Hey, just you and I talking about it. We're influential.
I think the Fed's going to do something here, or at least say they're going to. Or anxious to do something or do something like that. But now this week is a case in point, Kevin. If you look at wealth in the country has got to be down after this 4 days. I'm going to say the markets, I'm going to take a stab from what they said the other day. I could yell out to Dan, he probably knows better than me, but I'm going to say we're down $3 trillion in market value. Well, the median person that I'm always talking about who's making the, you know, 35 grand a year in the median family, it's making 58 or whatever. I'm going to say this probably hasn't affected most of them at all. So if you look at the median wealth numbers this week, the mean is going to show a much bigger hit than the median, correct?
Yep.
So it's just a question of defining your terms. And when you don't define them, it always strikes me as somebody's trying to make a point that it maybe shouldn't be made or something along those lines.
Yeah, and when you're jumping back and forth, of course, then, you clearly are clouding the argument. You know, that's mucking up the argument with facts.
But now you have to extend yourself forward. Now, I honestly believe and I hope that barring a mutation like 1918, from all the stuff I've read about this virus, I think if it actually got out of the population in general, it would end up being a little more virulent in terms of more people getting it, but probably not much more damaging than a normal tough flu year. That's kind of where my opinion is. Of course, that one piece of medical fact can change that. However, Kevin, it's had such a hype, in such a fear, especially because the way it's being handled in China is seemingly like such a disaster. Although they're basically telling people over there, go back to work, even if you're, you know, it doesn't matter if you're sick, you're not that sick. I mean, if, you know, at some point, if you have the virus and you're asymptomatic, I mean, why do you, I mean, if everybody else has got it, you might as well go to work, right?
I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not advocating that today, but I'm saying at some point you can see where this will flip over. I mean, we don't stop the world because we have a bad cold season, you know.
Even yeah. So the question isn't when will this pass? It's how long is it going to take for it to pass? Now, you know, maybe it's just the solution to the world's economic problems, including Medicare and Social Security. Maybe it's just going to wipe out half of the world's population. I don't think so.
No, well, sure hope not. Well, I mean, I'm concerned that anything that mutates in the last 8 months certainly has a better chance of mutating again than some flu that's been around for 400 years that we can name, right? You would think. But I mean, that doesn't mean it's going to. But I mean, when you look forward here, though, you constantly, what I'm trying to talk about this week is who's got what risk where. I mean, I see people signing baseball players to massive contracts. What if the first month of the season is being played with no people in the stands? Or not even being played? I mean, are these teams that loaded? Most of them probably are. If there's a work stoppage like that, do people get paid? I don't even know. What does the contract say?
That'll put the Cubs in good stead because their network will be more in demand.
Well, yeah, I guess. Especially if people are all staying home. But the point comes down to...
It totally favors the Cubs, the Yankees, people like that. So.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm saying, what is this? I mean, how many restaurants? I mean, the people that I see, this is the I learned this, Kevin, when I used to do... You guys ever do something called sensitivity analysis?
Yeah.
You teach that? They still teach that, believe it or not?
Sure.
I
do. I don't know if anybody else does.
What that means is if you put together a project and say you're building an office building, you're building a factory, you're building railroad cars, you're building planes, whatever it is, you get your best minds, you put all the things together, you put your schedule together, and you do the best you can to cost out the schedule, to have just-in-time inventory, to have everything you possibly can, you put this package together, and it comes out that, okay, you're going to start building on this date, your first one's going to be ready on this date, your first rental's going to be in if it's a building on this date, your first check from the rental's going to be in. You do all this together. And then you have some gnome like me, back when I used to be good at this, you say, you know, Tom, do some sensitivity analysis on this. And I'll say, okay, what if it's a five below winter for 3 weeks, and you lose 3 weeks due to weather. And you know, what if
our demand projections are off by a significant?
Yeah, what
factor?
If 2 years from now?
We have a cost overrun right. on that? And I was just yesterday teaching my project management class how to put that together, and then how to build in the ability to answer all of those questions.
Well, and I think what I used to find, Kevin. I mean, it's because I did some for factories. I did some from Allied Van Lines when we were talking about computers and stuff back in the day. I always found that you could pretty much take any one of the 10 variables and really bleep yourself with it. And it was, you're probably going to be okay if you have any kind of safety built into the thing. But give yourself, in other words, if you have a 40% screw up in one of the variables or 35 of the key variables, you're probably going to survive. But if you get a 5 or 6% screw up in 5 or 6 of the variables, you got a problem. It's a lot of little nicks that really get you, and that's what I'm so concerned about. This week I was talking with David and everybody else about how we've had companies over the last 5 or 6 years gleefully buying stock back, okay, and running up the prices so executives can get their stock options and the board people and all that stuff. You've got debt from some other places growing in other countries. We've got people, the balance sheets don't look as good. You've got some demand you're worried about a little bit because of your, you know, some the amount of healthcare is up for people. So there are other kind of, in other words, there's a lot of stuff that's kind of percolating under the surface that if all of a sudden you have a really bad few months for whatever reason, how resilient is everybody going to be to it? You know, yeah. I don't know
who can last.
Yeah.
Who can outlast this?
Well, and
if
who,
they if necessary, and there definitely are some companies out there that can't.
Well, and if unfortunately 100 farmers go out because they just can't cut it, are there another 100 people looking to get in the business with some fresh cash that are willing to take the place at 80 cents on a buck or 85 and go at it? Or is 85 cents on a buck too hard to come by? And somebody's going to say the prices still aren't very good. I don't want in. So now you're losing employees. You're losing all kinds of, I mean, the one thing that I possibly should emphasize is doing the show all along I have. There are a million variables out there, and there's 300 million people making economic decisions virtually every minute of every day, or every 10 minutes of every day. So you really have to look, and it's very, very difficult to see how that all plays out together. And when it all works well, it's like an Olympic athlete, for God's sake. God, that body, male or female, sure looks good, works good, seems to be doing pretty good, but you can't.
Pretty good, right up until you pull a hammy, and then you can't run very well.
But I mean, but to try and put it together from scratch, I mean, you know, to try designing a human hand, you can't do it, probably, right? So I mean, it's the same way about an economy. When the pins start to fall out, you have a problem. Now, the stock market thing, is it hitting at a really bad time? If it's a 20% correction off a good year, and we go back to a year ago, September, should it be the end of the world? The answer is no. But now, did people take a bazillion margin loans out of the stock that went up? Did people do stuff like that? Did some of the companies, did Apple? Apple's got nothing but cash. Did Apple buy a boatload of stock at 310? I mean, I hope not. We're trading 267, but maybe they made a really stupid trade. I mean, IBM has been doing that forever. I mean, they're buying 160, 180, and the stock's 131. So, I guess the obvious answer, Kevin, is you really don't know. You hope for the best is really what it comes down to. But S&P futures are now down 19. We were down 20, down 10. Now we're back down 19. This is moving. NASDAQ futures down 53. So we're heading back south again just as we speak. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Carson Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Low and open stocks, the stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Ollie, Mr. Mel Weber. Mr. Kevin O'Neill. S&P futures down on 25. They were just down 10 a minute ago. And NASDAQ futures down 69. Dow's only down 90-something. Was down 400 points earlier. Yesterday, we were down, I think you watched during the day mostly, if you're a professional trader, is you watch the S&P futures and the NASDAQ. Well, the NASDAQ, S&Ps were down 105, which is like a real lot. They came back almost to be down less than 20, and I thought we had a pretty good chance of maybe being up on the day. All of a sudden, they turned down a little bit, and news came out about the California watching 8,400 people, and we just drained, like out of the bottom of a shower drain, for God's sake. And the only thing that stopped us going down further was the closing bell. I mean, it was pretty awful. But right now, like I said, those are the numbers. We have 22, but even I've got a 10-minute delay on this other feed. We got the S&P futures down 12, and we're actually down 22. That's how quick this stuff's flying around. DAX down 422, that's 3.5%. FTSE down 205, 3%. These guys are catching up on the huge losses on the close yesterday here. CAC around down 153, 2.8%. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 805, that's 3.6%. Shanghai down 111, that's 3.7%. Hang Seng down 648, that's only 2.4%. Bonds, and here's the number, 1.21. These things continue to go down. Bonds up, rates down every morning. This is just crazy. Bund is down to minus 0.58. Japan minus 0.15, which is as low as it's been in like a real long time. Oil down another $1.16, 45.93. Brent down 92 cents. I keep saying down. Down is all I'm talking about here. Brent down 50, it's 51 bucks. Natural gas 169. That is unreal. I keep saying unreal, but it is unreal. RBOB 139. Gold, down 1670, 1625. We don't even want any gold here. The gold stocks were down yesterday as well. Silver down 59 cents, 1714. It was over $18, I think, last Friday. Now it's 1714. That's how crazy gold or silver is, between kind of a half industrial and half precious metal. It really is flying around way more than gold. Matty, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. A couple of issues on the south side. I-57 on the outbound side between 127th and Sibley Boulevard is still closed. It's been closed throughout the morning due to an overnight two-car crash with one car falling onto the railroad tracks and then catching on fire. So an investigation and cleanup has been going on all morning, and that has I-57 on the southbound side closed between 127th and Sibley.
Plus, if you put up here the engineer, he's driving along the locomotive, and all of a sudden, hey, there's a car on my track.
Yeah, not ideal, and it looks like that'll be closed up throughout the morning rush, or at least the first part of the morning rush, is it's been closed for a couple of hours now, so keep that in mind. One other issue on the south side, Bishop Ford outbound at Cottage Grove, there is a crash that's causing a bit of a slowdown. On the Ryan inbound side before 71st Street, there was an accident. So a couple of issues there on the south side. No issues coming in on the Stevenson. Traffic building on the Eisenhower, but no accidents to report. Same for the Edens and Kennedy. Lakeshore Drive looks good in both directions. We do have some issues. Looks like at the I-94 outbound exit ramp at Willow Road. So that's the Edens exit ramp at Willow Road. There is a crash. You'll have to navigate around that up near Wilmette if you're getting off the Edens. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today should see some sunshine, similar to yesterday, but cold temperatures, a high of just 30 with wind chills in the low 20s. Right now it's mostly clear and 21 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 80 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 49. In sports, the Blackhawks exploded for 5 third-period goals, coming from behind to beat Tampa Bay 5-2 last night. Coyotes were off. Bulls and Suns were both off. College hoops. Illinois stays hot. They're now 11-6 in the conference as they won at Northwestern 74-66. Both Arizona teams were in action, and they both lost to Los Angeles teams. The Arizona Wildcats lost at USC 57-48. Arizona State lost at UCLA 75-72. Chief.
Somehow or another, I have this advertisement today. It comes out of my CNBC. Now, I know I've never looked for any of these on the internet. They're trying to sell rowing blazers. I can see you two guys in all this rowing outfit going along on the Thames right in front of Harvard, you and Kevin, in your rowing blazer.
I've never actually rowed before, but it looks boring.
We went canoeing. Canoeing was kind of fun. We went up to the Quetico, the Boundary Waters area. My brother Dan was in his day, was pretty much of an expert canoeer. He used to do these 30-mile races and stuff.
That canoeing sounds fun. Carrying the canoe through the woods does not sound fun.
That was his job.
Hey, gentlemen.
Yes.
I have a furniture delivery today that was scheduled between 10:30 and 2:30.
And it's there.
He's here. So I need to jump off.
All right. Fair enough, bud.
So, sorry about that.
No problem.
I'm a little surprised to see him at this point.
Well, look at the
I told him, I'm not ready for you, man.
Look at the good news. You're up.
Huh?
Look at the good news. You're up. Matt's still sleeping.
That's true. That's true. All right. So I'll talk to you guys on next Wednesday,
okay.
If not before.
We have many individual stocks. We've got Apple, all of a sudden now, has taken the biggest hit the last few days. Down another 592. It was down over 6. Boeing is down at 283, or 466. The only stock here, I'm only thinking Microsoft too is taking a hit since they sort of pre-announced the other day. They're down 292 to 155. The only stock in the town that was up yesterday, it has to be because of these crazy masks. It's 3M. Can you think of any other reason?
Oh, wow. That's a really good observation. No, that probably makes sense. I don't know.
I mean, everybody's buying these things. I mean, you can't get them. I don't even know if people know how to wear them or how often you're supposed to change.
If people know how to wear them,
well, I mean, if you don't cover your eyes, I don't think it's
well,
helping you get
the,
it.
I don't think the mask is going to cover your eyes.
No, it's not. I mean, it's designed for you to not give something to somebody else.
Right, but it also protects breathing in. I mean, to get in your eyes, someone actually would have to sneeze on you.
Well, but they're saying this thing
to
is
to breathe in. Stuff's floating in the air enough. I mean, I don't know. I feel like protecting your nose and your mouth is a good start.
Well, it's probably better than nothing, but what I'm saying, it's more for one to infect the other, I think. But anyway, because, I mean, you see people in the hospital, they wear the goggles, too.
Right.
But have you seen any of that? You're more in the...
I've never seen anyone wear goggles. I have seen some more masks than normal on airplanes, certainly.
Are they surgical masks, or are they ones from Home Depot that I've seen?
They're surgical masks.
All right. Because the ones from Home Depot, I don't think help much.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. But, yeah, they appear to be surgical masks.
I think they've been out at a lot of the drugstores in the downtown area for a long time.
Really?
Anyway, so since we managed to lose Kevin, what do you think if this continues onward? And let's hope it doesn't. What are the 10 pins in sports? I mean, I don't... are we going to miss opening day at a few spots?
That's a really good question, because obviously the first things you would think about canceling would be large gatherings of people, right? And who more than sports has thousands and thousands of people all in one place. I haven't heard anything like that besides the Olympics in Japan, and I would imagine that those will get canceled. And they said they probably wouldn't delay them or, you know, postpone them or move them. They would probably just cancel them. And so I could see that. As far as U.S., I don't anticipate any.
Are they talking canceling the spectators or canceling the games themselves?
I think all of it. Nothing's been decided, but I think they're talking about all of it.
Well, I'm no disease dude, but
I mean, would you want people from 100 countries coming to your country at a time like this? If you're Japan, and if you're an athlete, would you want to go to Japan in a time like this? I think the answer is probably no to both.
Yeah, but we are talking. When are we talking? August?
July, August, yeah.
If
they're going to cancel, they got to make that decision pretty soon, I would think.
Yeah, I don't know. That's another question. How soon in advance do you?
Because right now you're in, what, 5 months out? It's February 28th. Let's say this starts in July. I mean, you're basically 4.5, 5 months out. You got to make a decision. People are probably starting to travel there in the next couple months.
I wonder if there's a big difference in how contagious things are at an outdoor venue versus indoor. In other words, would you cancel a concert before you'd cancel a baseball game?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I would think it would be worse indoors, but I wouldn't know.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, I think you have to start asking yourself at this point, like, what if on all this stuff? And do people have enough money? You know, what is the policy? Do they have to return those tickets? I mean,
Every time we've had some sort of outbreak, at least in my lifetime, whether it's the swine flu we had 10 years ago or the mad cow disease or whatever, we've had these different flare-ups, SARS, of course, and now this one, nothing's ever really panned out as far as like a mass hysterical outbreak across the country where everything shuts down. So I wouldn't anticipate that happening for this either, but, you know, doesn't mean it couldn't.
Well, there's been so much hype on this. Even if it's the proper decision, it's going to be very, very difficult one day for somebody to say, we're all going to get it, let's just do the best we can.
West Nile is another one that nothing really happened. I mean,
Nile,
people die, absolutely, and if you're one of those people, then something did happen. But, I mean, as far as, like, the country just going on lockdown and canceling sporting events and concerts and public transportation and all that stuff, I just don't see it coming to that.
Well, yeah, like I was saying yesterday, the disease has kind of fallen into two categories. If it's bad enough to where everybody seeks help, at least you have a better read on who's got it, right? And then maybe you lose some people. Well, that's not a good thing. But this one looks more to me like a regular flu or common flu. You can't control it, at least so far. I should never have read that stuff about the 1918 thing where it came across once, mutated, and came back. So, but I think that's why people are... There's like no test kits in California, and we got, you know, people in the office telling you everything's prepared. I mean, is this test any good on this thing? I'm saying it's probably not. I mean, they're talking about people getting false negatives all the time.
Well, I can tell you, I wouldn't trust that our leadership would have any sort of plan.
No. Well, there's like you say, there's a million diseases out there, and a lot of people pretty much, unless you're in real bad shape, in which case you have other stuff already, usually. But that's what the problem was, the 1918 thing. It went for people in the prime of their life more than it did older or younger people, because it essentially preyed on the better your immune system, the more susceptible you were, which is usually not the way it works. But you just wonder what's the, you know, I'm trying as a, you look at the stocks, I mean, I'm looking at my screen, I have the, you know, the industrial average, the transportation average, all that stuff right in front of me. And when something goes flying down like yesterday, the thing you try and pick up on, like I was saying the other day, what stock is down, they all should be down 3%, well, these two guys are down 5%, and these two guys are down 1%. Now, is there any reason I can think of why that is, why one is in worse shape? It might just be that one's a bigger part of the basket, and people are selling that one and not the other one. That's possible. Because I'm guessing that if all of a sudden the S&Ps drop, you know, whatever, I'm going to say maybe, you know, Home Depot isn't part of the basket, or Coke or something to a big extent. Or maybe even Exxon now, because these oil companies are down so low. I mean, the XLE is down to $44, $44.70. So depending on what's in people's baskets, those are the ones people are going to sell. And not every stock in the Dow probably is in everybody's, you know, top 40 stocks. So, matter of fact, it's probably a lot of people that aren't, there's some stuff that isn't in there, I'm sure. I mean, American Express is probably not one of the top, you know, 50 stocks in terms of market cap. Some they're maybe not in the basket. So, depending on who the person is and what their basket is, those are the ones they're selling. But you know, the Nasdaq, and even another story. I mean, yesterday every one of the fangs was getting annihilated. I mean, Amazon was back up to 2,100. Now it's back to 1,858. So it's lost almost all of the earnings push it made 3-4 weeks ago, and was up a couple $100 and gave almost all that back. Now, like I say, we're getting close to the area we were a year ago, September 31st. And I would say that if we hold that level or somewhere in here, I'm not being a technical guy, But if we hold that level with someone in there, we're probably okay. You know, and there's some people aren't, but we're probably okay. But boy, what David and Joel both gave us, what, 31-12 is one support. We blew through that like a landslide. Then the next one was what, 30-25, and we're 29-46. I mean, we went through both of those like there's no tomorrow. So I mean, it's been quite the sell-off. And I've seen worse, but it's one of these days. Now, one of these days, tomorrow, Monday, we should at least say enough already for a while until things get better. I mean, do you think that we should go down just what you know now, man, that we should go down much further? I don't, but the market's not asking me.
Well, I never thought we should go up as much as we did.
Well, that too.
To begin with. So I don't, I mean, should we go down much further? I really don't know. I think we were way too high, and it was looking for some reason to come down. I thought the coronavirus, 3 months ago maybe was that reason, and then for whatever reason, it's happening now.
Well, I mean, some of the ones that I would say that would appear to me, no, but then these companies, some of them, I was going to say Disney, I got to believe their theme parks are taking a hit or will if it ever gets.
Yeah.
Yet that means more people maybe staying inside watching the other stuff. So, I mean, they got it sort of covered. But they still get a lot of their income from the theme parks.
Right.
Have you read anything? Disney World in Orlando, or are they down 20% from last year or 10? I'm thinking they aren't yet.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. Somebody's told me it was still hard to get Cub tickets down in Mesa.
Oh yeah, no, I was watching highlights the other day, and it looked full for a weekday game.
I think those tickets are up to like $40 or $50.
I went a few years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, and I think it was maybe their second year in that new stadium, and the prices were not big league prices, but they weren't far off.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's
like the beers were still pretty expensive.
Well, I remember going to road games in the early 80s. You go to Diablo Stadium, and literally you'd show up, and it was like $3, $3.50 for the first three rows and $2.50 for the rest. Give us the first three rows for the extra buck. We'll be big shots, right?
Well, yeah, we went to a road game in Peoria as well, and it was a completely different experience than going to the Sloan Park with the Cubs. You go to Sloan Park, it's packed, it's expensive. It actually feels like almost like you're at a big league game. We went to the old dumpy Mariners Stadium.
Where's that?
In Peoria.
Okay.
Well,
when you say Peoria, there's a new complex out there where there's like two or three teams at the same complex. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. This was either before they moved into that complex, or this was a different stadium altogether. I don't know. But it was like going to a college game. I mean, there was no one there. It was cheaper. You're sitting on bleachers, and it was just a completely different experience. The Cubs were playing there, so we went there. And everything in Phoenix is 20 minutes away, so it doesn't really matter.
Now it is because of they put that 101 around the place. Before that, it wasn't. You were stoplight to stoplight all over the place.
Yeah, now you can get everywhere via an expressway now.
Right. I mean, it's pretty easy. I mean, I went to because the Sox, before they moved into the Peoria one, there was one kind of
Sox are in Glendale.
Yeah, well, I think they used to be in Peoria before they moved into the new spot in Glendale. The Glendale thing is nice. That's right where John Neal lives.
Oh, yeah.
But the Giants are still downtown Scottsdale, aren't they, in their old stadium?
Yeah, correct. I don't know if they got a new stadium or not, but they're still in downtown Scottsdale. They might have built a new stadium, though. I mean,
but they didn't have any. The interesting part, I don't know, the Cubs obviously spent a lot of money on this new one, but the old one was right down the block from the minor league complex. So if you wanted a guy to pinch hit at the seventh inning, the guy just basically run down the block.
I think it's still all part of the same complex.
Probably is, yeah, because you want everybody close.
Yeah.
But I didn't see any minor league complex when the Cubs were in, or when the Giants were in Scottsdale, which is that one stadium in town.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But I do know they're definitely the second most popular team down there.
The Giants?
Yeah. The Cubs, all the bars will have either Cubs flags or Giants flags out front. And just the fans you see walking around, they have a lot of teams there, obviously, in the Cactus League, but it's pretty much all Cubs and Giants.
Well, there were a lot of, not a lot, but I went to a couple times I was down there, not spring training time, and I found a couple of Cub bars where you go and watch WGN at night. Now, I wonder, does this marquee have any kind of legs like that or no?
is it going to have legs like that?
Well, I
imagine every sports bar that is a quote unquote Cubs bar is going to buy the.
But I'm talking about, can you get it in Scottsdale? Is my question. I guess I didn't make that clear.
Oh, on the regular cable?
Well, yeah, probably not.
Well, they've listed so far like the. I think so far they have deals with like 100 cable companies, and most of them are in like Iowa, downstate Illinois, Northwest Indiana. And then you have RCN and AT&T in Chicagoland area right now. I'd have to go through the list and see, you know, if they have Phoenix, but I assume they're trying to go nationwide, like Yes Network.
But it's not like if they were on, Channel 9, and they're not a superstation anymore, are they?
No, they haven't been for years.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, they have WGN America, which, just plays like shows and stuff. It doesn't carry any of the local Chicago stuff anymore.
So if I'm a guy or a lady sitting in a bar at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and the Cubs are playing a day game in Oklahoma, they used to be on now, whether they're on last year, whether they're on cable or GN or no matter what it was, they're probably not on, is what you're saying.
What I'm saying is 30 years ago, they were probably on WGN. Yes. 5 years ago, or the last 5 years, if they were on, WGN, then they probably weren't on TV in Oklahoma.
And if they were on Comcast,
they probably surely weren't, unless that place, picks up like the Major League Baseball package, which is a lot of what bars do now.
Right, but that wouldn't be Comcast, that'd be the Major League Baseball
package. That'd be the Major League Baseball package. So they probably wouldn't be on in that bar in the last 5 years, but there's a chance they could have been on. And now, unless they have Marquee, they're not gonna be on at all.
So what does Nick, pick up at the Tripoli to get not only the Bruins, but Boston College and all those other. What does he get? Northeast Sports?
Nessun, yeah.
What is that?
It's Nessun is, it's like, Comcast Sportsnet Chicago or NBC Sports Chicago is, except it's for Northeast.
But it's more than one station because he gets all the college down there too.
No,
it's like Boston College and all those guys.
Yeah, it's the same station, but they don't just carry the Red Sox.
Oh, I thought it was like a station package where you got the Harvard guys, you got the,
No, it's a Boston channel that carries all the Red Sox, and it carries, some college hockey. I know they do a lot of the Celtics games, not all of them, but they do a lot of Celtics games as well, and probably Bruins games too. And then he has the sports packages for anything he doesn't get on.
They must have the plus package because I've seen, the Red Sox, the Bruins, and the Celtics all playing at the same time. And he's got all three on there, so they must be like the CSN here was when the Cubs were playing and the Bulls or something. They'd have you have to go to the plus for one of them.
Exactly. Yeah. If you get that channel, you're going to get all those channels.
Yeah. I still am. Would love to have somebody in from that whole industry. Actually, I think I might have met somebody we could do this with. But as to whether or not the whole concept of how football is pretty much totally free, and the other guys are totally not free, and you wonder, how much maybe the regular on air advertising won't carry the other. Well, obviously the best thing in the world, Manny, is to have some schmuck paying you $240 a month that doesn't watch them at home. You still give me the $240. How much of that $240 that goes to the Cubs? They're just charging us.
Good question. I wonder what that split would be. And the $240 you're referencing is RCN added $2.40 a month to your
to my package
to your package for the Cubs channel.
Well, specifically, they added it to the Sports Extra piece of my package.
Right, but they called out that it's an additional $2.40.
Yeah, they said because of the Cubs, we're going to add the Marquee to the Sports Plus, which is the third package up. The basic is you get the free TVs, you get CNBC, you get whatever, the shopping network, and what else you get, like the History Channel and a few of those. That's your basic. Then there's the one up from that where you get another 50 channels on top of that. Well, I'm in the third one, not the fourth one, but all of them, I think Extra is the Sports Extra, which is the different ESPNs, the Comcast,
Big Ten Network,
Big Ten, and
all the Bulls, Blackhawks, yeah. All that. Yeah, I've always had that, so I've never had.
But I think you can get that even with the cheap. But they weren't successful, like we were saying in the car. They're just telling RCN, just make everybody pay $240, and we'll give it to everybody. I mean, RCN basically said, screw you with that.
Yeah, I don't think anyone has that power except for ESPN.
Yankees might have.
No way.
Yeah, they weren't?
Okay. Yes Network? No, no. They're in the same one.
They're in the same mess that well.
The no, same. They're in the same tier as Marquee.
So nobody was able to force them in the first one like, you know, the CNBC.
ESPN is the only one that has the power to do that.
Well, I mean, if
like even FS1 and all those Fox channels, they're not in the tier one.
But I mean, if the Cubs would have said, we'll do it for a quarter, I bet they could have done it.
Yeah, probably.
Because, I mean, CNBC gets probably next to nothing a household, but they get every household. SP Futures up 1850. We come back. We're having down 1850. I'm dying for it to be up one of these days. We come back. We have Mr. Carl Denninger. We talk a little about some specific medical things that people have sent us. Anyway, should be interesting. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? Have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278. 1278 so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Holley, Mr. Matt Weber. We also have Mr. Carl Denninger from Market Ticker. S&P futures down 26. NASDAQ futures down 80. Carl, I understand that you've been buying and selling at every move and had every single top and every single bottom, and now you're on top of the world back there, buddy.
Yeah, you know, don't I wish? Actually, no, I've been kind of sitting this one out and just it truly with amusement. I you know, it's from a technical perspective, if you look at the S&P on a weekly and you take some of the, you know, look at some of the common technical indicators, you know, MACDs and things like this, the market has been in a grossly overextended state now since really the beginning of the year. And so, of course, when it gets like that and, you know, sits there for a long period of time, you don't know when it's going to break, but when it does, it's probably going to be pretty violent. And the trouble with that, though, is that trying to short that is, you know, I mean, if you try to do it anywhere from, you know, the first of the year up until this last week, well, you know, we know what happened to you, right?
Well, we have, you know, all kinds of people that, you know, trade on our IB platform. They do it through us, so they have somebody to talk to if they need somebody. But it's basically, you know, you do it all yourself. And, you know, right. you don't, we had, you know, we have a couple people, had one, you know, a couple people who actually were short. Then when it went flying way down, absolutely refused to take any kind of a profit. I mean, yesterday was rough, real rough. And then, and then when it came flying back up, said, oh no, I'm wrong. Bought the stuff back in, it's like a loss now instead of a big profit.
And now they got destroyed, because now we're down again this morning.
Then they weren't short when we went flying back down again, because we actually sneakily came back to only down 20 in the spoos yesterday, and we ended up closing down on 150 or something. But it's sort of odd, Carl. You see some of these stocks that, I've got Apple now down 782 after it had tried to make its way back a little bit here this morning. But, you know, so many things seem to have come together sort of at the same time. But, hey, I have a missive here. I'll read this. Take me a couple of seconds. But it's kind of right up the stuff we're talking about, right up our alley. But it's also interesting because we got a guy, hey, love your program. I'm in Brisbane, Australia. He listens every day. So I concur with the healthcare cost problem because my cousin in Vancouver sadly passed away recently. He had a holiday in Las Vegas late last year, so he probably has, what, the Canadian, hospitalization, which I don't know what that does when you're here. Anyway, in attempting to sort out the estate, he must be the executor, we were told that the medical bills that came over $400,000 for 2 weeks. So the house was being sold, two generations of toil in the family are simply gone to pay off 2 weeks of a hospital bill. He goes, I myself had a 5-minute consultation with a neurosurgeon, cost $300. That was 5 years ago. On that basis, the guy would have earned about $10 million since then. Oh, yes, but they have insurance coming. The guy isn't making $10 million. I mean, where is this dough going, Carl? I mean, and how much can they stick on somebody? And why not just tell them to stuff it, especially if you're from Vancouver?
Well, that's exactly the game that these guys play, and this is one of the things that nobody wants to talk about in the political sphere, is that, you know, I got lucky in some ways. I dealt with my late mother's estate last year, and when she got, you know, when she was on her last legs, she just refused to put up with any of that BS and refused, you know, whatever the doctors wanted to do. She's like, no, bite me. I'm old. I'm going to die, and you know, I've made my peace with God, and it's okay. And the thing is, though, you know, my father and I had fights over this thing in Social Security and Medicare and all this, And, you know, many years back when my daughter was a little baby. And I told him, I said, you know, he's like, well, you know, I earned it. I'm going to, you know, use everything I can get and whatever and have you. And I said, look, you already voted, because they were lifelong Democrats. I said, you guys already voted to spend all this money. Okay?
Yeah.
You know, it came out of your tax, you know, yeah, I get it. You paid it in, you know, in employment taxes, whatever have you. But you already voted for programs to spend all the money. You can't spend the same dollar twice. So what you're basically saying is that this little kid who happens to be, you know, your granddaughter who's crawling around a carpet, you're going to try to stick with whatever you can get out of her as you are on your deathbed. I said, now, if you think that's moral, ethical, and appropriate, then, you know, God love you, but I think there's a guy in a red suit that's going to be waiting for you when you get done.
Well, yeah.
And the thing is that when it actually came down to it, and when he got, you know, when he got older and on his last legs, he too chose that he wasn't going to do that. Okay, so he changed his mind when it actually mattered. And, you know, my mother did as well. But the thing is so many people don't. And then what happens if it's involuntary? You know, you're sitting somewhere and you have a heart attack, right? And like this guy, he's in Canada, where he normally lives, which, oh, by the way, has essentially cradle-to-grave health care, although it's paid for by very high taxes. And it's good for routine stuff. When you get in serious trouble, not so much. All right. And so people that are very wealthy in Canada, they tend to come to the U.S. because things are rationed. So, but then he gets it when he's here. And then they turn around and try to sock him for $400,000. All right.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if you look at the graphs of where all the employment has come from, these things are floating all over the place. It's not very hard to find. The number of people who have been employed over the last 10 years in healthcare, and it breaks out all healthcare employment, and then those who are actually doctors and nurses. You know, those are the guys that really take care of you. It is a tiny percentage. Everybody else, their entire job is stealing your money. That's all they do.
Well, that's right. I mean, but you know, it's interesting, Carl, when you talk to, I mean, we're not CNBC. I mean, we're not high-end dudes here. I mean, some of us are, like you, maybe, but we're not. We're all pretty darn high end when it comes to one thing, and that we always have had at PTI, and you know I'm sure Kevin has and Lou always has, and I think you always have. We've always had pretty much top shelf insurance, combined with living in an area that has university hospitals. Everybody, the people you know that are in the industry, know who the best people are. That if somebody has a hangnail, within 10 minutes, I can find out who the best hangnail guy is in Chicago, and we can probably get an appointment for him. I mean, if you have a heart rhythm problem, you got three places around here that'll do, you know, what do they call it, the zapping you back in through the catheters, right, and stuff. And when I was in Toronto, I went to see some guy in business a few years ago, medical device thing of all things, and as usual, Carl, I sit down and talk to some people. I sit at, you know, local bar and hotel, and by the minimum 2 minutes, I'm in conversation with somebody. And all I do is talk about their medical care. And everybody here, you know, says what you just said. Well, you know, you can't get this, you can't get that. And I said to the guy, what's it really like? And he goes, well, he goes, I've been in the U.S. He goes, it's very similar to somebody in the U.S. that has basically, what's it, the HMO.
Right.
He goes, if you're in Toronto, and your mother has brain cancer, and you can go to the right guy, and you're in good terms with him, you can get the recommendation to see the specialist pretty darn quick. And you're going to go see somebody at the University of Toronto, and the guy's going to be just like somebody in the U.S. Because if you're out in the backwoods of, you know, Quetico, just like if you're in Dixon, Illinois, it's probably going to be 6 months before you see a heart rhythm guy. You know, you're just in AFib and blood thinners and Lasix until then. Because it's not that much different, because it's the same thing. There's a scarcity of it. And depending on right, where you are and who you can select and the doctors you know, the right people are always going to get to the right guys quicker than somebody else. Because,
right.
So, I mean, it's, in a lot of ways, it's a lot less than you and I are used to, but I don't know that it's any worse than what somebody in Dixon's used to. Not saying anything wrong with Dixie, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's, well, see, that's the thing. It's not really all that different. And that's, that I think is the point. The difference though is, you know, I don't know how much time you spend in Canada. I used to, years ago, I used to be over there all the time because I lived fairly close. And so I'd go over there and, you know, play around and do whatever and then come back. Of course, after 9/11, it stopped being fun because now you actually have to have a passport and everything else. And, you know, yeah. I mean, they used to just look at your driver's license and wave you through, okay, before the, you know, the Twin Towers. Not anymore. Now they actually, you know, they actually care who's coming in their country. Gee, figure that one out. But, you know, the funny thing about it is that the last time I was there, was for a couple of weeks with my daughter. We spent a couple of weeks in the summer around the Niagara area and Toronto and things like that. And when you look at the taxes that those people are paying to support this, you just, I mean, you know, your eyes peel back out of your head, all right? I mean, gasoline, for example, you know, $6 a gallon, okay? I filled up my little, you know, my little Mazda. It was $60.
yeah.
Excuse me? You know, and the thing is, but it's on everything. It's everywhere, okay? The GST and, you know, and everything. I mean, it doesn't matter where you turn, and then if you talk to some of the local people, what they're paying in income taxes, and I mean, you know, just the total burden is crazy compared to what we have over here in the United States. And yet, okay, yeah, they have, you know, they have socialized medicine. The other thing, though, is that they haven't gone after the cost monster, okay? What they've done is they have essentially said to the drug companies, we're not paying your extorted prices. This is what we're going to pay. And the thing is, every other country except the United States does that. They look at the cost of production, of reproduction. They add in something for R&D, and they say, this is what it's going to be. Take it or leave it. That's the way it goes. And so what ends up happening is everybody here in the United States pays for the development of every single new drug. And then the entire world gets to use that R&D for free. Now, here's an interesting point. Last year, Medicare spent about $70 billion on prescription drugs. All right?
That's a number.
So far, I'm sorry?
That's a number.
Yeah, it's Part D. Okay, $70 billion. So far this year, that is up a double-digit percentage rate. All right, on a you know, comparable period basis. Of course, we won't know until September what the full year is. But it is skyrocketing. Now, here is the nasty part of this. The entire pharmaceutical industry, according to the last set of numbers I found, which, it's just a compilation work because most of these companies are public, right? So, you know, I mean, what they spend on R&D is, you know, it's part of their reporting. The entire industry spent about $80 billion. So we could take all, and oh, by the way, most of what they use is primary research that comes out of NIH grants.
Right.
In other words,
yeah.
We pay for it. Then they take that research and turn around and patent what somebody else came up with.
Carl, I will bet you that the entire research and development costs for the three, shall we say, male drugs 20 years ago did not equal the last 6 months they paid in the NHL and the National Football League for commercials.
Oh, absolutely. And see, here's the thing. We could, if we decided we had enough of this BS, we could tell these companies, all right, here are your choices. You're going to cut this out right now because what you're doing is illegal. It's been illegal for over 100 years. And if you refuse, not only will we go after you, we'll do worse. We'll take that $70 billion. We will spend it on publicly funded grants to major research centers and universities around the country. The condition, however, on the money is that all patents and patentable material that comes out of it gets deeded to the public.
Right.
Nobody will ever make a dollar on it again.
We can't
do anything about the drugs that are already there. But this would essentially turn every single pharmaceutical company into a manufacturing facility that makes 10%.
Which we probably should do.
And you know what? And we could do it tomorrow, and it would stop the BS in the drug system. The problem is, if you were to do that, and see, notice, Bernie Sanders, who's running around talking about socialized medicine along with the rest of the Democrats, not one of them has said they're going to do this.
No.
Not one. All right? But this would actually fix the problem for prescription drugs.
Nobody.
The thing is, there's not a thing they could do about it either. It's legal.
Nobody on that stage, or nobody in the, ever since Clinton, the Clinton's wife at the time, before she was known around the world as her own self, Hillary, was putting together a medical plan that basically people sneezed at.
Right.
It probably was the time we should have done something. I have a feeling from what I recall about it, I actually liked it better than the Obamacare. So then Clinton basically said, okay, I'm not getting anywhere with that. So he spent 8 years doing nothing. Bush wanted no part of it. Plus, he had the problem with 9/11. And then Obama gets in, and he's going to try and do something. We're 25 years down the road, for God's sake, and we still haven't found a way to deal with the drug companies. I was saying, by the way, your name was probably burning the other day. I was saying, these Democrats, whatever the guys on the platform, to me they look just as dumb as the Republicans did in the same forum. I mean, Carl, tell me how you're going to achieve and maintain world peace. You got a minute 15. I mean, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. I would say that if the people on this show, which is a pretty bright group, and we had some, you know, doctors and people knew more than we did, I'm going to say if we got the nod from Trumpy or whoever the hell happens to be there to go and try and find a plan, I'm going to say it's a 6 month to a year job, Carl. It starts with patents. How much can you charge? The patent is it 17 years? Is it 5 years? I mean, what if they would have patented the polio vaccine? Does half of everybody's income in the country go to Jonas Salk? What's the number?
Think about the abuse. Just some of the abuses. Okay, here's one small one. A number of years ago, when I was a kid, there were kids that had asthma. Right, you probably knew a few of them in your school, right?
I actually did for a little while, but I got
And you know what? All these kids ran around with these little albuterol inhalers. They cost about $1.
Yeah.
All right, and they had a CFC in them, a refrigerant, same refrigerant that was one of the original ones. I think it was R21 or R22 or R12 that was used in air conditioners. Well, the Montreal Protocol banned those because they're greenhouse gases. Okay, and they destroy the ozone layer. Okay. So they banned those for that purpose. The pharmaceutical lobby was out there lobbying for these propellants to be banned in inhalers, even though the percentage was like 1/100 of 1% of the usage in general. They got banned. They turned around and they filed another patent on a different propellant. They didn't change the drug. And now all of a sudden, these things are $40-$50 a piece. Instead of three. Alright? Now this is the kind of BS that goes on every single day. And our government could put a stop to it in 15 minutes and they don't.
Well, the, Matt's buddy Scrushy, was that his name? What was his name?
Buying up orphan drugs and then jacking the price up 500,000%.
Well, no, they got a patent on a new cap for the EpiPen.
Yeah.
But yeah. Lou says the EpiPen was developed by the Army for people in a gas suit, that if all of a sudden you had gas, you could jam a needle into you through the suit. Because it was
designed for atropine originally, yeah.
And so how does a new cap, and Audrey's friend, a doctor, says that for her to give somebody, what's the drug in there? For
epinephrine.
Yeah, he says, well, for her to give somebody a epinephrine shot in the office costs her $1.50.
Well, you can buy a vial of epinephrine, a sterile vial, costs about $1.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and that and a couple of insulin syringes, okay, and hello?
Yeah.
The difference is you have to actually teach somebody how to use it as opposed to with an EpiPen, you just jab yourself in the thigh.
Right. Well, right. Yeah,
but the thing is, this is the kind of screwball nonsense. We have exactly the same medication, exactly the same thing. Instead of $1, it's $300.
Just in general... I mean, because I have a little bit of an odd view of this, because the instructor I had in college that I still remember he never actually said, but he taught all about mergers, acquisitions, patents, and it seems to me that four or five of the biggest patents that ever the people have names attached to them, those people didn't invent the damn thing. I mean,
right.
They've been stolen since day one, and I'm not so sure that his conclusion wasn't, if we got rid of all patents, we'd just be better off.
Well, I don't know about that, because the premise of a patent in general is sound. The problem is how they're abused. And the other thing is that supposedly the rules are supposed to be that you have to actually innovate. Okay, there has to be something new.
Right.
The problem with what's going on with medical drugs, you know, with drugs and devices generally, is the kind of thing that went on with Albuterol, where you have no change in the drug. What you did was change the propellant, which is an inert substance in terms of what happens with the drug in your body, right?
Yep.
And somehow changing something that's completely inert manages to get you, you know, another patent term's worth of protection. And that's just BS. The other problem, though, with this is that let's say that we dealt with this and we did what I would recommend, which is, okay, we're going to spend the money as a matter of public health, and there are no patents because we're going to sign them all to the public. Okay, they're going to public domain. If you did that, it would be like 7% of what Medicare spends. Now, Medicaid doesn't break it out. So, I mean, because that's a block grant program in the states, right?
Right.
So Medicaid probably spends about the same amount, but I can't get an actual number on it because it's not broken out. Medicare is because you have Part D.
What does the veterans do?
You know, thank you, Bush.
What do the veterans do?
Well, veterans get it through VA, but the thing is that, again, the only place it's broken out in the MTS where you can actually figure out percentages is in Medicare. And it's a very substantial part of that, but it's not enough. I mean, even if you zeroed it, it wouldn't stop the budget from blowing up. So the screwing is happening all throughout the system. It's not just there. The worst part of it is in the hospitals. And then second, in terms of just in dollars, in percentage terms, the worst part is in the hospitals. The second place is in the ambulatory care area, you know, the doctors, physicians.
Yep.
And then after that is drugs and devices. But the problem is that the growth rate is overwhelmingly happening on the drug side. So but again, even if you zeroed the drugs out, you wouldn't stop the detonation because it would just shift somewhere else. And we have to take a systemic view towards this and say this nonsense.
That's my point.
It's going to bankrupt the country.
That's what I'm saying. For us to have a hospital plan, you'd have to go back, and if you're going to leave the insurance people in there, you have to have some. There needs to be some combination. I really believe that instead of going to socialized medicine, we could find a way to make it more competitive and be better.
It'll be real simple.
Yeah.
Okay. If you think about this, what is the purpose of insurance? Insurance is a product you buy to pay you if an unlikely thing happens. You pool your money together with a bunch of other people because you can't afford it if the bad thing happens. Your house burns down.
Right.
Right. But your house burning down is an unlikely event. It's not. It is not probable. It's very improbable. It has a very low P. The problem with what we have done is we've allowed these people in the political sphere and in the business sphere to commit fraud, felony level fraud in what they sell.
Right.
What you have today is insurance, is not health insurance, because insurance cannot cover something that's already happened. You can't buy fire insurance on your house if it's already on fire.
Well, I guess, but there's a lot. I mean, how do you, in an insurance situation, there needs to be a way where somebody who's going to get an MRI on their knee, say, instead of going to, you know, pick a hospital here for $6,000, actually is incented, maybe you're going to send them, maybe you do something, to say, if you can schedule this at 2 in the morning someplace for $800, you know, somehow or other, it's worth it for you to do that.
Oh, no, well, that's simple, okay? Everybody has to get a bill personally, and everybody gets a bill at the same price for similar circumstances. All right, this is the basis of Robinson Patman. It's the basis of competition law. It's been on the books for 100 years. Now, whether you have a company that you send that to and gets paid, that's between you and them, all right? But the same thing happens when you have a car accident. Same thing happens if your house burns down. The only place it's not true is in the health market. And the problem with this is that there's no reason for you to shop because look, what your health company pays is between you and them. It should not be between them and the hospital.
Right, right, that's the problem.
It should be between you and them. And now all of a sudden, hey, gee, I need an MRI on my knee. Well, you know, since I'm going to get the bill, and then I got to give it to somebody to get it, you know, to get it taken care of. Yeah, I'm going to care what it costs.
Well, yeah, we've totally gotten that out of the loop, and the insurance right. companies must love it because the bigger the pie is, the bigger their share of it. Well, even if the share is anybody. Anyway, S&P futures down 25.75. We're been as low as well. It's about the lowest I've seen. It was a lot lower this morning. But minus 10, we got to a little while ago. But since Carl's been talking, we're down 16 points. I don't know if there's a connection there. NASDAQ futures down 67. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Carl Denninger with us as well. SP Futures down 27, 28, 26, 75. I gotta believe this stuff is like 2 hours wide in a one line. I mean, it's really something. NASDAQ Futures down 88. We've had a drop here of about 6 points while we were at break. I don't know exactly why that is. We had a personal income rose 0.6% in January versus 0.3% increase, so you would think that would have been some good news. Of course, January is a long time ago, the way we're looking at things now. Dow futures down 183 over in Europe. I mean, big sell-offs here. Again, they didn't, they were down yesterday, but nothing like we were because we closed a lot lower in the last hour. They're making up for it today. DAX down 401, that's 3.2%. FTSE down 207, 3.0%. CAC around down 151, 2.8%. So I guess they're the good one. Nikkei down 805, that's 3.7%. Shanghai down 111, 3.7%. Shenzhen stocks, which is another one of the exchanges over there, down 5%. Hang Seng down 648, 2.4%. So they're, I guess, the relative winner over there, if there's such a thing. 10-year yield, 1.21. Man, oh, man, I don't know what the Fed's planning on doing, but this is getting pretty low. One minus 0.59, Japan minus 0.15. Oil, again, going down, 1.56, 45.53. So that's down, pushing 10%, and make that 20% in like 5 days. Brent, 50.98, natural gas, 167. RBOB 139, even gold. They don't even like gold here. We're selling everything, even gold. Down 18 bucks, 1623. Silver down 51, 1722. Many we have for us, traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. I-57 on the outbound side is still closed, Chief, between 127th and Sibley. There was an overnight crash with two cars involved, one car falling on the railroad tracks and then catching fire. Below, so that not a good scene there, but that still has I-57 on the southbound side, the outbound side closed between 127th Street and Sibley Boulevard, so keep that in mind. On the inbound side of the Ryan, it looks like there's a crash just before 71st Street, and that's causing some congestion if you're coming in on I-94. No issues on the Bishop Ford. Earlier crash is all clear. We do have an issue on the Stevenson. Left shoulder is blocked on the inbound Stevenson just before Pulaski. I-355 to Lakeshore Drive is up to 42 minutes from the Tri-State, 33 minutes on the Stevenson. Traffic building steadily on the Eisenhower in both directions, but no accidents to report. Same for the Edens and Kennedy. Off the expressways, out near Hanover Park, Roselle Road at Irving Park Road, there is a crash. And then out in Naperville, Route 59 at Continental Drive, there is an accident. And just southeast of there, Route 83 on the northbound side at 63rd Street, there is a crash. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, some sunshine, cold temperatures, a high of 30 with wind chills in the low 20s. And then we warm up a bit this weekend, could touch 60 on Sunday. Looking forward to that. Right now it's mostly clear and 21 degrees downtown, going up to a high of 30. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 80 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 50. In sports, the Blackhawks tallied 5 third period goals in their rout over Tampa Bay 5-2. Coyotes were off. Bulls and Suns were both off. College hoops, Illinois is now 11-6 in the Big Ten after beating Northwestern in Evanston 74-66. Arizona lost at USC 57-48. ASU lost at UCLA 75-72. Chief.
The, like I said, the market, we're down 29. I'm trying to give a clue here on these S&P. Well, they don't have strikes as low, this week, but yesterday, Carl, or Wednesday, let me see if I can get some strikes this low. Maybe we adjust strikes like every day here. These option volatility numbers are really something. On Wednesday, I mean, remember we went a whole year, Carl, without a 1% move?
Oh, yeah.
And now the price on the S&P last Wednesday at 12 o'clock was pricing a 1% move to the close.
Yeah.
I mean, how different is that from, you know, where we were, you know, not all that long ago, a year or two. Now, all of a sudden, we don't seem to know. When you start doing these kinds of positions, we had a roll yesterday. We had, talking church here a little bit. We had the 214 puts expiring today. It just so happened to be today in the QQQs. And the thing buries through our strike, so we've got the put protection. It goes down to 210, right? And so we rolled out 2 weeks to the 210 puts, and sold the ones that are now $4 in the money, we had to pay for that spread.
Yeah.
Which is really something. I mean, we're here, the S&P's, the Spider is down pushing $5 pre-market here, so we're at 293, all right? So having said that, we closed last night at, say, 298. The 298 straddle, I'm going to say, went out at, like, $7. So that's essentially over a 2% move in one day is the way the thing is being priced. That's something. When you look at the VIX and you see the VIX trading, pushing 39 or wherever the hell it is. I'll look at the exact. No, actually, it's 40 now. It's up another point today. It comes down to your price of insurance is very, very high. So to just say, buy something here or sell something here, if you're doing options, they're priced like we could be anywhere in 10 minutes.
One of the problems is, obviously when you get these kinds of sell-offs, there'll be a bounce from somewhere, right? I mean, we don't know where it's going to be from. But trying to buy calls to capitalize on that is a great way to get your face ripped off, because what will end up happening is the VIX will collapse
right
at the same time. And so you're going to end up with, you may get a 40 or 50 handle rally in the spoos and lose money on the call options.
Right. Well,
and it's like, I look at situations like this. If you're not in front of it, there's nothing you can do. And you could do spreads, which is about the only way to neutralize that, that sort of impact, because then they both move the same, at the same time, right? But that's about it. And that's it is what it is.
Well, yeah.
What's generating this though? And it's all this coronavirus stuff, right? But think about this. You look at this analytically. Take the emotion out of it for a minute. Where the biggest issues have been are in places where we don't have white man sanitation good.
Right.
All right. There are all places that have squat toilets, where the guy that cleans the place is running around with a mop. It probably doesn't have any bleach on it or anything else. So all he's doing is spreading the what all over the place. Right.
Right.
And there is, and my thesis on this since it began, and I've been doing podcasts on it now, since this first broke, every day, put an update out there. It's about a, 20 minute or so, about half of it's politics, but the other half is the virus stuff. And the thesis that I've had since this started was that, before it was announced, is that the primary route that's getting people sick like this is fecal transmission. And then we started to get the news stories that say, oh, by the way, yes, it is spread that way. It does show up in people's feces, which is unusual for a virus that doesn't infect the GI tract. Normally that doesn't happen. But that did happen with SARS. And that's why I thought there's probably something going on here. Well, as it turns out, it is. And then when you look at where the actual spread is, that's the bottom line. But the option to actually stop it from getting into the U.S. expired about a week after it first broke out, and Trump did not slam the border closed to everybody, which it would have been tremendously disruptive economically. However, it was the only way to actually prevent it. So now what they're doing is essentially, number one, prevent panic, okay? And the reason is, and slow the spread, not stop it, just slow it down a little bit. And the reason is this: if you actually are infectious and you go into the hospital, the only way you're not going to infect everybody else in the building is if they stick you in a negative pressure room. You have any idea how few of those there are in the United States?
Very few.
Yeah, like a few thousand.
Well, but I mean, we're also talking that, well, I have been doing a lot of study as well, Carl, as you know, and I, what you say, by the way, is absolutely true from what I read, but to me, this is caught in kind of a never-never land, in the sense that the difference, and I was actually reading up on SARS yesterday, and the difference is, in SARS, if you or I got it, we're sick, and we're going somewhere. And the death rate was about 6.5, evidently, retroactively. They went back and studied. They thought it was 4.5 or 5. Turns out they think it was a little more. But the point being is they had a pretty good read on every case, because everybody who was sick, if you
right
could find a doctor, you got there. Now, the other stuff is, you really don't know on the flu season or the cold season who the hell's got it. Because, I'm not going to go see a doctor if I get a cold unless unless it doesn't leave the lungs for 3 weeks, you got to get a Z-Pack or something.
Right.
I mean, but there's this, the good news is it appears that the fact that the fatality rate is under one and a half. The bad news is there's a hell of a lot of people walking around, maybe walking around, don't even know they have it. It's like somebody could be a cold carrier with a very minor cold that affects the next person. But we don't even make an attempt. If we know that in Australia and in Brazil and Argentina and wherever damn place we're talking about, if there's going to be a really bad, what's the type A influenza, H1N1 or something?
H1N1, yeah.
We don't stop people from flying there to here, even though we know when it gets up here, 50,000 people are liable that are affected with pneumonia or other stuff, are probably going to die from it this flu season. We just say,
chances. Well, that's the other thing, too, is, you know, we've had this year, this has been a relatively mild flu season.
Okay? In Chicago, it hasn't. We've been pretty busy.
Well, in terms of fatality rates, it has been.
Okay. Well, that part I agree with.
But, I mean, we've had bad years where the ordinary seasonal flus killed 80,000 people in America.
Right.
All right. This year, it's been about 10,000. So in historic terms of severity, not in terms of how many people get it, but in terms of, you know, the people get flattened by it, it's been relatively mild. Now, the thing is, though, nobody pays any attention to that. The thing that's really getting people with this is that if you're over 80, your fatality rate, if you get this virus, is about 10%.
Yeah.
All right. So in people who are immunocompromised for some reason, and God help you, if you're not 80, if you're on a cortical steroid or something like this for some kind of chronic condition, and you get this disease, you're in big trouble.
Or if you're in chemo or whatever else, God.
Well, anything that suppresses your immune system, you're in a lot of trouble because this thing is extremely virulent in those people. And there's some theories on why that is. I've gone into some detail. I don't take too long to do on the air. But the thing that I think is so interesting about this is that really what this is about is why is it that we as a nation, when you get down to it, the premise of all of this offshoring and all of this concentration of supply into places where you can have slave labor and let's face it, the Chinese are communists. What are you putting your factory over there for? Because you can get $3 an hour labor.
Right, absolutely.
that's why it's
happening. You're paying off some local politician to keep his thumb on the people.
Yeah, and that's basically what's going on.
Yeah.
Okay, and we have cheered this on in America because it makes it makes Apple's stock price go $300, and while they're selling $1,000 iPhones, instead of their stock price being $100. Okay, I mean that's the reality of it. That's
right.
That's why we're doing it, and that's what we're doing. Okay, now what we didn't do though is they didn't get white man sanitation good out of it. They still crap in toilets that are basically holes in the ground.
Right.
And they have these wet markets and all. I mean, it's a cultural thing. And you can't fix this by throwing money at it, because if you look at what happens, they put in, standard sit down on the throne, flush toilets, and people stand on them and squat. It takes generations to fix this, which, of course, when you have this kind of thing going on, you don't have generations. All right? So now, what do we have that's happened here? Well, we've actually allowed the offshoring of something like 80% of our pharmaceuticals.
Right.
Not just finished products, but the precursors that you have to have in order to manufacture them. And they are coming from the very same place. So we put these manufacturing facilities of critical components in the places that we know do not have the ability to deal with something like this.
Well, we have
and we do it all in the premise of a buck, and that, by the way, is not just a Democrat or Republican thing. It crosses administrative lines.
Well, that's the whole the one thing I keep spouting your name during the week in arguments with people in various libraries and coffee shops. When you start to look at the whole picture, the politics, you can't tell when somebody's in office or the next guy is. I mean, granted, there's some people who do stuff better or worse than others, but this has been a tremendous thing for the major corporations. This is, who's the guy, Harold Janine from ITT. He must be, I doubt if he's in heaven, but if he is, he's looking down at this going, this is just great. These companies are more powerful than any government. right? And that's what he strived to be at ITT, right?
The whole thing is a scam, and people think that there is no cost that goes along with this kind of thing. It's all benefit. Well, you're dead wrong, and now we're getting the cost.
Well, right.
And if this thing gets loose, like I said, all they're trying to do in the United States right now, because slamming the door closed, which in my opinion was the right thing to do, but it's politically suicidal, because if you do it and then it's not bad, you're going to lose your job.
But
just the way it is.
Well, first of all, I'm very worried because it just recently mutated. So my own answer to this question is I'm very worried about it. But you don't think that at some point, like I said, we don't try and control H1N1 coming from Australia. We don't try and control the common cold. We give up on it. I mean, is this thing one of these diseases that the Chinese right now are saying, hey, everybody's got it. Let's go back to work. If you don't have any symptoms, what are you doing at home?
As I pointed out in my podcast about a week or two ago, it is entirely possible that I personally had it about a month back because I had a very atypical mild flu. I didn't even go to the doctor because there was no reason to. Okay, I mean, I ran a moderate fever one night, but the presentation was a little weird, okay, compared against the normal seasonal thing. And it didn't really do anything terrible to me. It made me a little uncomfortable for a couple of days, and that was it. And then I had that hacking cough that stuck around for a while, and it's like, And that was the thing that got my attention, because there was a little, like I said, the presentation wasn't typical. And so it's possible, but of course, there's no way to know, because I was never tested, and so right now they're actually looking for the RNA, so they would, if they tested me now, they wouldn't find it because they're not looking for the antibodies. And but it's possible that it's actually been going around for a while.
But you would have, but if you're like the lady in Japan that has zero symptoms, she infected enough other people, some of those people had symptoms, so you hang around enough people that probably somebody around you would have gotten it a little worse than you did.
Well, somebody might have gotten it really bad, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, you never know. But the thing is that if I'm right about where the major route of load is, because this is kind of the funny thing about viruses and about infectious diseases generally. When you have ones that are not universally fatal like this, okay, where the fatality rate is highly variable, a lot of it depends on how much virus you get. Because you need a certain amount of it to overwhelm your immune system and for it to start to multiply on an exponential basis and actually make you clinically sick. If you get a small enough amount, you either get a mild case or you don't get anything at all. You might test positive if the test is sufficiently sensitive, but you never become symptomatic. And unless you are shedding it, I mean, think about this. If it's shedding what you expel out your mouth, right? If you're not coughing, you're not expelling very much or sneezing, all right?
Right.
Because it's just your air going in and out. There's not really much viral load in that. Where the problem comes in is if this thing is as I hypothesize, is primarily being spread by a fecal route, well, white man sanitation, good. You sit on the can, and then it goes down into a sewer, and it gets treated, and the virus is destroyed. What happens when you defecate in the open, like in India, or if you've got a hole in the floor and you're doing a squat thing and it's all over the place, there's no toilet paper, there's no running water, there's nowhere to wash your hands, there's no soap, and then the next guy comes in and grabs the door handle and gets a whole load of it all over his fingers.
How is it we haven't heard anything from India? Because we heard that they had their first case like 3-4 weeks ago. There's got to be something going on there, you would think.
No surveillance over there yet, and especially in the poor areas. And my guess is that, you look at what's happening in Iran, okay?
Yeah.
They have their shrine over there, Qom, which they refused to close, by the way. And that little environment is almost identical to what happened down in South Korea in that town, where the lady that was sick, we now know that she actually showed up for these church services at a church that is very cult-like. It's Christian. You could call it a cult. But it's Christian-based. And anyway, their services essentially consist of all these people being huddled together, all up against each other. You can't have any kind of anything on your face. So no face masks, no glasses. And she's visibly ill in these services. she infected the entire congregation. And essentially, most, like 90% of the cases that they have in South Korea came out of this one place.
Well, I mean, if you had to, we've got a couple of minutes here. Let's get, if you had to look at, you know, I'm going to say I'm staring at the Dow and the transportation, so I've got all the other fangs and stuff in another column. With all the stuff that's going on in the last, you know, few years of stock buybacks and something amazingly in good times, the corporate balance sheets maybe even gone down a little bit. Where would you put, I mean, I don't know how long United Airlines can't fly to Asia and keep their profits up. Where would you say that, where's the most stress? Clearly right now the oil companies have taken a massive hit. Cruise companies, I don't know what, I mean, it's gotta be, every day now I'm starting to see some company canceling a seminar thing or a meeting of some kind, you know, 1,000 people here and 500 there. Where are we most susceptible? Obviously Apple's taking a big hit, but then again, the fangs ran so far ahead of everybody else, it's hard to, they're pulled back, it's hard to know whether they just were too high to start with. It's kind of hard to figure out where you want to be next, Eric, or short.
Well, I don't think you want to be anywhere right now, because I mean, when you look at the problem with what's happened and the reason you got the kind of crazy sell off you did in the last couple of days is simply because valuations have gotten so distorted and so divorced from reality, and the Fed and their so-called repo nonsense, big part of that.
Yeah.
And the idea, the problem is, everybody now is clamoring for the Fed to come in and do something, right? I mean, that's all I heard yesterday.
Right.
All right. The problem is, what can the Fed actually do? Because they can't get people to actually leave their house and go spend money. And that's where the stress is coming from right now, along with the supply chain disruption. So there isn't anything that the Federal Reserve can do with interest rate policy that addresses either of those two things. You can't fix the supply chain disruption, and you can't get people who are sick to get out, or afraid that they're going to become sick, to get out of their house and go, you know, buy a car. Okay? You just can't. So, I mean, you know, is the screaming going to continue? Well, sure, and Trump is at it again.
Yeah.
But are we going to actually get, I mean, you know, I don't know. I thought it was rather interesting. We had the guy from the ex guy from the Dallas Fed that was out and said, basically, look, what do you want the Fed to do here? Is there supposed to be a put under the market for every exogenous thing that happens that the Federal Reserve writes every time it happens? It's Fisher.
The answer is
yes. He's like, no, this is crazy. It would be one thing if this was something that monetary policy could actually address, but this isn't one of those things.
The answer is yes.
Well, I mean, obviously, for every politician, right? I mean, you know, Trump has hitched his wagon to the stock market, so what happens if there's a 50% sell-off?
Well, it's not just...
And by the way, there might be.
But it's not just... the stock market, it's anything, if you look at the prices, Carl, we've gone over this, if you look at the prices of anything, and I'm not going to sound like, you know, I belong on a stage, anything that the one percenters essentially buy and own, I mean the real one percenters,
right.
not just the stock market, baseball teams, football teams, I mean the price of that stuff is up three times in a decade.
I know.
I mean, it's anything like that. I mean, buildings, I don't know, depending on where you are. Because even buildings, I think, are up quite a bit. But the simple stuff I look at, Carl, and you do too, a lot of people I know in the restaurant industry are right at the edge because wages have gone from, I'm going to say, 10 to 11. All right. So it's not a major month, but they've gone up some. Some of it's minimum wage, some of it's the way you, whatever. But virtually every one of these guys and ladies is under the gun because of the lease.
Right.
And now if you take, instead of 40 dinners a night, you drop that to 35, I think that these guys are that stressed. It's not like you and I own our own hot dog building, and if we serve 100 hot dogs a day or 80, it makes a difference in whether, you know, we buy a new car or something, but it really doesn't matter to our place. You know what I'm saying? We still can pay everybody. We still can have a hot dog. I think a lot of people in various industries are very stressed because of leases, because of things like that. And I don't know how the hell United Airlines is going to make it like 6 months not flying to Asia. I mean, I don't think they got that kind of cash. They lasted like 2 months after 9/11, right?
Yeah, well, that's the whole problem is that you're essentially talking about a demand collapse that isn't credit driven.
Right.
okay? So, I mean, it's one thing if you have a demand collapse where, well, you know, Joe is buying subprime cars, you know, with a subprime loan, and we need to loosen credit so he can buy a car because right now he can't qualify. All right? Well, but that's not what's going on here. This is Joe thinks he's going to die, and so he's sitting at home watching Netflix.
Yeah, and he doesn't need a car. I mean, Carl, thank you very much, buddy. I'll have you on soon. S&P futures down 55. Nasdaq futures down 174. So we're heading south here again. Not sure exactly why, but we are. We're back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.